Welcome to Temple of Health Radio Show. This is Dr. Susan Kolb, and I'm pleased to have back as my guest Dr. Beth Darnell, who is the author of The Opiate-Free Pain Relief Kit, 10 Simple Steps to Ease Your Pain. It's well known that abuse of pain medicine is rampant in the country, and there are no good solutions for this, because once addicted, getting off of the stuff is fairly difficult, and it contributes to problems within the medical field as well as potential criminal problems if sources get cut off and patients turn to the street to get their pain medicine. So Dr. Beth Darnell has come up with some solutions, and today we're going to talk about her 10 Simple Steps to Ease Your Pain. Well, welcome, Beth. Thanks for joining us.
Oh, Susan, thank you so much. It's a delight to be here.
So would you tell the listeners a little bit about your background? And we did a previous interview. Go ahead and mention that as well.
Absolutely. So I am a clinical psychologist, and I am a clinical associate professor at Stanford University, and I have been working exclusively with people who have chronic pain for about 15 years. A couple of years ago, I wrote my first book, which was called Less Pain, Fewer Pills, Avoid the Dangers of Prescription Opioids, and Gain Control Over Chronic Pain. And, you know, the big message there is that nobody wants to take opioid medication. These are people who have pain and they want to suffer less. They just want their pain to go away. And opioids have been overwhelmingly prescribed, offered to them as the solution, when in fact we know that they're a very, very limited solution and they carry profound risks, which I'm happy to talk about in detail. But my mission has been to help connect people who are living with pain with alternatives to opioids so that people have a choice, and if they are going to end up taking opioids, they're just one component of a comprehensive pain care plan. They can't be the whole story. If opioids are the whole story, that's problematic.
So this book is 10 steps to helping do that. Would you like to talk a little bit about how we start out doing that?
Yeah, absolutely. So, you know, the reason I wrote this second book, The Opioid-Free Pain Relief Kit, was that my first book, Less Pain, Fewer Pills, I talk about, you know, the risks of opioids, really explaining why we want to avoid these medications as much as possible. And this second book, The Opioid-Free Pain Relief Kit, is sort of a little practical workbook. Okay, now that I understand why I need to do this, how do I apply that in my daily life? And I wanted to make it really user-friendly so that anybody could pick up this book and get started on what they can do to help themselves. So the very first step is really understanding what pain is and where our control lies in really being able to put a container around that experience. One of the most common myths out there is that pain is just something that happens to us. And when it happens to us, then we need to sort of, you know, mobilize and figure out how to make it go away. But in fact, what I teach people in this book is that pain is not a passive process. Believe it or not, we're constantly participating with how much pain we actually have, with our thoughts, with our emotions, with our daily choices, all of these things. This is really the psychology of pain. And it turns out that the psychology of pain is integral to actually how much pain we experience. And in fact, psychology is built into the definition of pain. Pain isn't just that hurt that you feel in your body. Pain is defined as a negative sensory and emotional experience. So most people are really surprised when they learn that psychology is built into the definition of pain. And I like to even describe pain as being a psychological experience because it's fundamentally a product of our nervous system. Even if you feel that pain in your foot or your finger or your arm or anywhere in your body, it is fundamentally a product of the nervous system. And so it's very sensitive to all kinds of things that are going on in our lives. And that's the opportunity. So the first step is to really understand that pain is so much more than we tend to think it is.
So your book comes with a CD in it called Enhanced Pain Management. You want to talk about that?
Yeah. So, you know, in that first step, talking about how pain is more than we think it is, I like to explain that pain is our harm alarm, and it is designed to get our attention. It signals to the brain and the spinal cord that something is wrong, that there is a threat, there is harm mm-hmm. afoot that we need to get away from. And, you know, this works really well for alerting us that we need to, you know, move our hand off the hot stove or something of that nature. I mean, pain is very effective. It motivates us to get away. And when we escape that pain, then we know that we're safe and protected from harm. But once we have chronic pain, those signals continue to fire. That harm alarm continues to ring in the nervous system. But, you know, we can't readily escape something that's coming from inside of us. So that leads to a lot of ongoing signals, a lot of ongoing consequences in the human body, a lot of muscular tension, our heart rate changes. It causes a lot of distress to have this harm alarm ringing, and we can't escape it. So the solution there is to have a technique to be able to quiet that harm alarm, to lessen its impact, to dial down the volume so that it's not causing a lot of additional problems for us, including just pain itself. And this audio CD is designed specifically to quiet the harm alarm. It works directly on the nervous system. It's a 20-minute relaxation CD that also includes binaural technology in it. And binaural technology is simply sound that acts on each hemisphere of the brain in rapid alternating succession to leverage the nervous system into a much deeper state of relaxation. And this is known to counteract pain responses. So simply by using this audio CD regularly, I recommend people use it daily over the course of weeks, and even a couple of months, you start to train your brain away from pain. You start to rewire the nervous system away from being in a constant state of hypervigilance and alarm because that harm alarm is ringing. So you start to gain greater control over that harm alarm. You turn down the dial on it. And that's a critical level of control to people who are suffering with pain.
So what else is good? What else does this enhanced pain management CD help you with?
Yeah, so the CD itself is a 20-minute relaxation response CD. So it's my voice on the CD, and I'm guiding people through diaphragmatic breathing, total body muscular relaxation. People learn how to not only control their breathing, but what they learn is that behind the scenes, without them even knowing it, their heart rate is slowing, their blood vessels dilate, their muscles relax, and they learn that they're able to change their psychological and their physical experience by using this CD. Now, this relaxation response, it's medicinal for pain. It's also helpful for stress. It's also helpful if people need help getting to sleep or staying asleep. Anytime the body, the brain is on some kind of an alert and we want to calm that, that's what this CD can be good for.
And steps, yeah, your step one that you were describing is quiet your harm alarm. And the step two is understanding the psychological experience of your pain.
Mm-hmm.
That you've touched on that as well. When we're upset or anxious, what happens to our pain level?
Yeah, great question. Well, you know, most people who have chronic pain will readily tell you that when they're under a lot of stress, their pain is worse. And this is a natural relationship. Stress worsens pain. And if you think about it, pain is a stressful experience. So they're really interrelated. You know, there's this bidirectional relationship. They feed into each other. And in fact, when we are stressed, our body responds in the same way. Stress rings that alarm. It's not necessarily the harm alarm, but sort of, right? It's you know, our heart rate goes up, our muscle tension goes up. The point being that pain and stress impact mind and body similarly. And so the great news is then we can use this same formula to address both. It's kind of getting, you know, killing two birds with one stone or getting a bigger bang for a buck. Anxiety, other emotions, fear, worry, those act on the same regions of the brain that are associated with pain processing. So when we're fearful, when we're anxious, if we are worried about our pain, wondering if the pain means that something is wrong with us, and if we can't distract ourselves from that, if we're over-focusing, ruminating on pain and how awful it is, that actually amplifies pain processing in the nervous system. And so what I mean by that is that how we direct our thoughts and the emotions that we are experiencing register in the same regions of the brain as does pain. And so just by worrying about pain, you can actually grow pain in your brain. You can actually amplify pain in the nervous system with how you're thinking and feeling. And that's not because anybody wants more pain, but this is what happens behind the scenes without us even knowing it. And that's why it's so important to become educated about how this works and what you can do to reverse it.
So it's very important to understand that you can, because there's a psychological component to this, you have other methods in terms of thoughts that can make your pain worse and conversely can make your pain better. You want to talk about how controlling your thoughts comes into this now?
Yeah, this is the coolest stuff. Most of us don't put too much thought into, you know, that narrative, that mental chatter that's just going through our mind automatically all the time. I mean, whether we stop and think about it or not, you know, we're constantly having thoughts flowing through our mind, just, you know, constantly. Mm-hmm. It's that natural mental narrative. Well, it turns out that that's a really important narrative, that it is impacting us ongoingly. And particularly when it comes to pain. So it's important for us to begin to bring awareness to what are the types of thoughts that we're having. The research shows that a specific type of therapy, it's called cognitive behavioral therapy. And if this is the type of therapy that you would get if you would work with, you know, an average pain psychologist in the community, or a lot of health psychologists have used this type of approach, cognitive behavioral therapy, where we really take a look at what kinds of thoughts a person is having and how those are impacting how a person is feeling. And so, you know, just to give you a concrete example of how this works, if I hear a noise in the middle of the night, I could suddenly have a thought oh my gosh, it's an intruder. What if someone's breaking into my house? And I could have all kinds of feelings of anxiety and stress related to that. So my emotional experience in that moment is a product of the thoughts and interpretations that I am making about that noise that I heard. Now, alternatively, I could hear that same noise and I could think to myself, oh, well, that's just, you know, the dog or the wind is blowing outside. And I could just like roll back over and go to sleep. No anxiety, no emotional experience. And so I give this example just as an illustration that our emotions are largely born from how we interpret circumstances, that the circumstance itself is less important than the meaning we give it. And so cognitive behavioral therapy simply recognizes this, and people are guided to begin choosing to bring awareness to their thoughts and interpretations and to begin steering them in the direction of helping them feel better, you know? And so that's where it's no longer a passive process. We're starting to engineer how we think so that we have a different experience, a better experience. So in the book, I talk about this in relationship to pain. And so, you know, I could wake up in the morning and my back could be killing me. It could be really hurting. And I could say to myself, this is terrible. It's going to be an awful day. I know it's only going downhill from here. And so then not only do I have pain, but now I'm really going down a slippery slope of despair about my pain. Alternatively, I could wake up with that same amount of pain and I could say, ooh, okay, not feeling too good today, but here's what I'm going to focus on to help myself right now. Here's what I'm going to do. I know that heat helps me. I'm going to get my heating pad out. I'm going to do my relaxation exercise. I'm going to do what I need to do right now to keep my pain as low as possible so that I'm going to be best set to still get into the office today. And so it's about helping ourselves set ourselves up for success, to better control our experience. Now, you know, the thing I always like to say is I could do all of those things, Susan, and maybe I'm still not able to make it into work because my pain might be a 9 that day. But I'm taking better care of myself at minimum, and I'm not unwittingly worsening my pain with that big layer of despair that I'm heaping on by focusing and dwelling on those negative pieces. So this is the opportunity. This is sort of the magic of psychology, where we start to understand that there is a level of control we have over our experience. It's not going to cure people's chronic pain, but it can really change their lives and their experience.
Yeah, I'm seeing some opportunity here for education, too, about things like migraines and muscle spasm and that kind of thing. Now, that may not be the cause. Like, you might have a disc problem as the cause, but then the muscle spasm sends it into, you know, maybe from a 5 to a 9. You can do heat with muscle spasm. You can do magnesium. You know, there's different forms of magnesium, including magnesium oil that can be put over the areas. There are pain patches that work very, very well. I'm not talking about lidocaine pain patches. I'm talking about more energetic pain patches that calm the area down. There's a lot of different things that you can go to help decrease that pain. Now, of course, ultimately, treatment of the cause is the most important thing. And
It's true. But I'll give you one example that I think is so striking. I work with a woman who has severe migraines that were incredibly debilitating. And what she learned through working together was that the main trigger for her migraines was muscle tension in her neck. And this is true for a lot of people. And what was the trigger for the muscle tension? It was relationship stress with her husband, with her father, and with her kids. And what she learned was that she learned how to recognize her own needs. And then she learned how to communicate those needs to others, to set appropriate boundaries so that she wasn't abdicating her own needs for the sake of others. She learned how to prioritize herself, take better care of herself. And in the process, she was protecting herself from this massive load of stress that was tightening her muscles, that was triggering her migraines, that was then knocking her out and making her bedridden for days at a time.
Right.
And so her solution ended up being changing her relationships with herself and with other people so that she came first. And I see this over and over and over again in clinic. Now, what was the actual medical etiology of her migraines? I don't know, but what I can tell you is simply with this psychological approach, she has control over her experience now. It's remarkable.
Yeah, I think I can give you a little bit of idea of how that is triggered, though. That is triggered. Stress causes a decrease in magnesium. Okay. Magnesium is deficient in most of us, or borderline in many of us, because of lack of good food supply of magnesium anymore because of the diet we eat. And sometimes it's potassium, too. Sometimes people, if you have a potassium deficiency, it just aggravates the magnesium deficiency. But magnesium is responsible for vessel dilatation and contraction. So without magnesium, vessels contract. And that's the initial thing in a migraine is contraction. And then later you get over-dilatation and then the pounding, you know, the pounding of the headache. So a lot of natural pain relief supplements contain magnesium for that reason. So that's kind of how that works. And if people were to take magnesium supplements just prophylactically, then a lot of the emotionally based muscle tension, because when you get stressed with emotional things, you do tighten up. That is true.
Absolutely.
And so that could make the threshold for that tightening up causing a migraine or a headache, a tension headache, that could change that.
Yeah, it's interesting. I mean, I can see where, you know, that magnesium would be a buffer. And then imagine it's like, but if we also set people up so that they're not depleting their stores through these, you know, choices or their environment, and so then, you know, that bit that you do have in your system is actually sufficient. We're exceeding our resources. You know, the diet is poor these days, but our lifestyles are poor, and we're exposing ourselves to unprecedented levels of stress with few coping skills to manage it. And it's the recipe for pain.
Yeah, a lot of times I have a whole group of chronic pain patients that come to me because of defective silicone implants, and they're basically the cause of it is chemical toxicity, and then biotoxicity leading to yeast and mold overgrowth. And a lot of chronic pain is due to biotoxin exposure or chemical toxicity that lowers the immune system enough to cause these co-infections, including intracellular infection. Now, a lot of really bad pain, like the Gulf War syndrome, you remember the neurological aspect of that? That's intracellular infection, and that's the basis of our biological warfare system. So no doctor, no regular doctor is going to know how to treat that or even that that exists. But essentially, intracellular infection, viral illnesses, especially involving herpes because of the shingles that can be involved at the nerve root, and infection. I've seen mold infection causing trigeminal neuralgia. Once I treated the sinus mold with antifungals, the trigeminal neuralgia went away. So these nerve injuries are either physically induced, say by a disc or a bone spur or a you know, fracture or trauma, or they're induced by infection. So infection can be bacterial, intracellular bacterial, yeast, mold. Now, yeast doesn't cause so much other than stomach pain when you get a lot of gas in your stomach. But mold produces a biotoxin that causes all the pain, and because it affects the nerves. It's a neurotoxin. And then viruses like shingles, herpes with shingles can cause severe pain. So you have to look at infectious causes. Now, the sad thing is that these people aren't getting treatment of the cause of their disease.
I mean, that's
really the sad thing, because most of it is treatable, either with surgery, if it's physical, or with some sort of, like, take degenerative disc. Degenerative disc in my patient population are due to the fact that their gut flora is altered and they can't absorb amino acids. So over time, that leads to degenerative diseases like disc disease, some degenerative arthritis, and also like rotator cuffs, you know. Whatever degenerates as you get older degenerates faster if your gut isn't healthy. So getting rid of the chemicals, getting rid of the bad bacteria and yeast and mold overgrowth, and getting back to, you know, healthy gut is what's really important to prevent massive degeneration. And I think a lot of, I mean, I don't think even doctors in general are aware of these things. And I wouldn't have been aware, except I have so many patients that have this going on.
Yeah, agreed. It's underappreciated, certainly.
So basically, let's go to the power of daily mind-body medicine. You've got some good suggestions in this chapter.
Yeah, so the main message is that we're retraining mind and body. You're training your brain away from pain. I like to tell my patients that it's like your brain is your pain computer, and we're sort of changing the program. And in order to do that, we can't just send the message once or send an intermittent message. It's the daily practice that actually rewires. You know, you're changing literally. I mean, we can call it thought patterns, but we're creating new neuronal pathways in the brain. And the way that we establish a true pattern is through repetition. So that's where I talk about the importance of doing this on a daily basis. So if your doctor prescribes you a medication, you don't just take one pill and then say, well, you know, I took one and, you know, I still have pain, it didn't work. If your doctor prescribes you a medication, you know, chances are you're going to be taking it for 4 to 6 weeks regularly. Right. At least once a day, maybe several times a day. And after a course of weeks, it builds up in your blood and your system. You're able to then perceive the effects of this medication. And mind-body medicine is the same way, but sort of as a culture, we have different expectations of it. We'll think, you know, wow, well, I listened to a CD once and I still had pain. It didn't work. Well, that's not how it works. That's not how it's meant to work.
Right.
It's not meant to take pain away in one, two, or three listens. What we're doing is we're rewiring nervous system. And so the results actually unfold over the course of weeks. So I like to give people an example. There was a great neuroimaging study where they scanned the brains of participants with chronic pain. And then they put them through 11 weeks of a cognitive behavioral therapy, group cognitive behavioral therapy. So every week people come for 2 hours, you learn information, you learn skills. But the fundamental skill that people are learning is this relaxation skill combined with monitoring thoughts and being able to change those thoughts so that, you know, again, they're training their brain away from pain and from distress. So they do this over 11 weeks, and then they scanned their brains again at the end of 11 weeks. And here's what they found. They found that at the beginning of treatment, before treatment, these patients, this is typical of people with chronic pain, they show atrophy in the regions of the brain that are associated with pain control. And that's well established. At the end of 11 weeks, after only receiving this psychological therapy, which they used daily, at the end of 11 weeks, they showed volumetric increases in the regions of the brain associated with pain control. They literally grew their brain. And so I talk, it's like a muscle. And you're strengthening the areas that are associated with pain control. It took 11 weeks, but wow, phenomenal differences, right? And so this is what's available to people. But you don't get the results if you don't do it regularly. Then you're just changing your experience in the moment from time to time, and that's fine. But as a pain psychologist, I'm not interested in just helping people feel better for 20 minutes. I'm interested in helping them gain lasting changes, lasting control. And that takes daily practice over a course of weeks. I usually tell people, you know, just give it 2 months, 2 months of daily practice. And that's that is a therapeutic dose of mind-body medicine, and you will have your results then.
Well, there's scientific proof that that endorphins decrease pain. You're familiar with that.
Absolutely.
And then there's medication like low-dose naltrexone that it is known to increase endorphins. And not only do you see a decrease in pain, but you also see sometimes cures of things like cancer and autoimmune disease and other things associated with T-cell immunity. So I want to mention now that lack of endorphins, which can occur mainly with opioid pain medication, because it's well known that your endorphins go down. You try to do surgery on somebody who's on chronic pain medication, it's very, very difficult to get pain control, even with with all sorts of narcotics. So LDN is known to increase endorphins. It also is associated with cures of cancer and autoimmune disease and other illnesses that are associated with T-cell immune defects, which would be yeast, mold, viruses, cancer, and intracellular infections. So
what I want to propose
is that increasing these endorphins is not only very important for pain control, it's very important for your immunity.
Yeah, everything, in fact. And so you hit on a really important point, which is when we take opioid medication, when we take it exogenously from outside of ourselves and we take that medication, what it does is it suppresses our internal opioid system.
Right.
We all have, you know, endorphins. It's our endogenous opioid system. And when we take external opioids, it suppresses our internal opioid system, endorphins. And so then that's no longer working. And then we become reliant on the pills to do for us what we're actually naturally set up to do. Now, that's point number one, and then it's real easy to see how we get set up for problems, right?
Mm-hmm.
But the other point is that when we have chronic pain, often we start doing less and less. Our life changes. We're not working.
Right.
We're not going out with friends. We're not doing things. Those are the things that would trigger our natural endorphins. It's pleasure.
Mm-hmm.
It's going out with your husband or your wife. It's going to lunch with your girlfriend or coworkers. It's going for the hike. It's spending time in nature. It's all of these things in life that are meaningful to us, that are pleasurable. Those trigger our endogenous opioid system, endorphins.
Right.
And as our world gets smaller and smaller with chronic pain, if we allow it to, then we're shutting down that system further and further, suppressing that. And that has a lot of downstream consequences. It impacts our mood. It impacts the immune system. It feeds back into pain. And that's why one of the chapters in my book, I talk about pleasure as pain medicine, because what we're retraining is your endogenous opioid system. We have to get that going again. And we know that pleasure counteracts pain. Flat out. And there's multiple mechanisms for why. You just described a really important one, Susan, the endogenous opioid system. There's multiple mechanisms, but pleasure counteracts pain. It's an antidote. Just like the relaxation response is the antidote to pain and stress responses, pleasure is an antidote to pain. So again, it's bringing awareness to how we can counteract pain and its consequences as a pathway to help us gain more control over it.
Now, most of my patients that have chronic pain aren't sleeping well. Do you want to talk about the sleep-pain connection?
Yeah, absolutely. So most people who have chronic pain are well aware that, you know, they might have trouble getting to sleep because the pain is right there front and center, or maybe the pain wakes them up at night. A fallacy is that a common approach may be, well, I'll take my opioid medication so that I can sleep better. What we know about opioids is that they actually disrupt sleep architecture. So they may make you feel sleepier at night, but the quality of sleep that you get while taking opioids is very poor. And so opioids actually contribute to sleep disturbance over time. They contribute to sleep apnea, which means that you're not able to get enough oxygen in your body into your tissues, and they actually contribute to the worsening of pain over time. So that is something to be very mindful of. It's almost like alcohol in that sense, where a lot of people think, oh, you know, I'll have a drink at night, I'll relax, I'll sleep better, but we don't, because alcohol is very disruptive to our sleep. But over time, opioids have a very negative influence on sleep and prevent us from recovering at night. And so when we don't sleep well, that's the main predictor for pain intensity the next day. So sleep is a critical, critical area to focus on. That's an opportunity to better manage pain by focusing on sleep and how to help yourself sleep better. So I talk about this in the book. I talk about using behavioral techniques, using some psychological techniques, using that relaxation response at night to help you get to sleep. If you wake up, using it again, focusing on non-opioid strategies to target sleep, because, you know, opioid medication, it may seem like it's helping, but it's not really serving you well when it comes to sleep. And so we really want to avoid that as much as possible. Melatonin, you know, may be a nice option. You know, talk to your doctor about that. But that
Let me tell you a little bit. Can I interrupt a little bit on melatonin?
Please.
Melatonin by itself in my patient population doesn't work that well, because there's actually two things that are depleted that need help. Now, my patient population has a lot of biotoxins from mold and chemical toxicity. So if you think your problem is a sick building, or if you've been diagnosed with fibromyalgia, which is usually often sick building syndrome, sometimes the mold is in you, but two things are being disrupted. Melatonin production is disrupted, but also GABA production is disrupted. So you need something like Gabatrol, which is GABA and cofactors. GABA alone will not work. You need the cofactors. And if you take Gabatrol or something equivalent along with melatonin 20 minutes before you go to bed, then both pathways are satisfied and you can sleep. So
excellent.
Know that just because you take melatonin, don't think that because it doesn't work, your melatonin isn't depleted. Sleep is a complex thing with multiple neurotransmitters as well as hormones such as melatonin.
Yeah, thank you for that, Susan. That's great. And it's so easy to see how millions of Americans would have pain and would not be sleeping well and would be prescribed an opioid to deal, you know, that they would take at night so that they could sleep better. And we can all just sit here and look at that and see that, you know, for the vast majority of people, that's a flawed approach. It's flawed for multiple reasons, because it's not actually addressing the problem, and it's actually worsening the problem, unwittingly contributing to the problem and worsening it over time. So this is where education is so critical, and proper treatment.
Well, many sleep aids that are prescribed by doctors actually end up disrupting REM sleep. Of them that are like Klonopin or any of the Valium type medicines, taken long term, disrupt REM sleep and increase significantly the risk of depression. So, if you don't have REM sleep, you don't produce growth hormone. So, you can imagine all the things that can occur with that, including accelerated aging. So, almost all of the chronic fatigue and fibromyalgia disorders have a sleep deprivation in them and as a result have a very, very low growth hormone level that's been measured. So you see how everything is wheels within wheels. You have to,
yes,
doing one thing at one point isn't enough. And, you know, patients don't like it when I prescribe like 8 to 10 supplements. Some of the supplements are for detox, some are for immune system, some are for thyroid, some are for sleep, some are for whatever. But that's what it takes to get the system back. This is functional medicine, and you have to tweak each of these little areas that are off. You can you know, put big diagrams in front of you and see where each system is being disrupted.
Now, makes perfect sense. Yeah, it's great how you're really getting to the core of it and, you know, eliminating some of the actual contributors to the problem. And then the psychological piece is empowering people to have better control over their own mind and their own body so that, you know, they're able to essentially dampen the impact of pain and how it's showing up and driving some of these needs for treatment.
But one thing we have to remember, Beth, is that the majority of these chronic pain conditions, except maybe some back pain and neck pain issues that are physically based, most of these areas are politically incorrect. That's why your doctor doesn't know how to treat them. The drug companies have jumped in and prescribed Cymbalta and Lyrica and Neurontin to help with pain. But the God's honest truth is doctors who publish about mold, sick building syndrome, or mold biotoxin disease, doctors who publish or try to study intracellular infections lose their medical license and sometimes their lives. So you have to understand that the politically incorrect diseases are the ones that are causing a huge amount of the chronic pain. And so I would encourage anybody involved with these patients to get them to integrative holistic medical doctors who can actually correctly diagnose and treat the source of their pain. Because it's great to manage pain, but you need to treat the cause of the pain.
Yeah, you know, and a big problem is most patients can't afford to see doctors that aren't covered by their insurance. I mean, that's a huge problem.
We have integrative holistic doctors here at Millennium and Plastikos who take insurance. So, and many doctors do take insurance. Insurance doesn't not cover office visits well. It does. What it doesn't cover is supplements. So that's, they will have to pay for the supplements, and they have to understand that that is for the tweaking of all the pathways. It will also often cover the lab tests to diagnose the problem. So they can find an integrative holistic doctor that will take insurance, and then they may have to come out of pocket for some of the treatments, the detox treatments specifically, and immune therapy treatments. But the other treatments are often covered, or the diagnostic treatments, or diagnostic things. So, well, we're coming up on the end of our hour. Would you like to give your contact information?
I'm pretty easy to find on the internet. I have a website, BethDarnell.com. And if you go to my website, I have lots of free resources there, podcasts, radio shows, magazine articles, videos. So if you want to learn more about pain psychology and how to manage pain without pills and learn different techniques to manage factors in your life that may be serving to amplify your pain, then please visit my website to learn more.
I also want to mention that we had an interview earlier with Beth Darnell, Dr. Darnell's book, Less Pain, Fewer Pills. We've talked about that in detail with a lot of very good information. If you go to plastikos.com and look in the archives, I believe that was in 2016. Is that right, Beth?
You know, it was either 15 or 16, but yeah, it's fairly recently.
Yeah, I think it's in 16.
Okay.
Pretty sure, because I did a lot of counseling to my patients after we had that interview. So basically, if you have other friends who have chronic pain, this interview will be up in about a week on the same venue, www.plasticos.com. So her both books are very important, Less Pain, Fewer Pills, and The Opiate-Free Pain Relief Kit. So thank you very much, Beth, for the interview. It's been great.
Oh, Susan, my pleasure. Thank you so much for having me on again.
This is Dr. Susan Kolb. We've been interviewing Dr. Beth Darnell on Opiate-Free Pain Relief Kit. Next week, we are going to be interviewing Estop and Anderson on The Haunting, Asylum 49, and then Kate Montana on The E-World, Ego, Enlightenment, and Other Essentials. Thank you very much for joining us. This is Dr. Susan Kolb with Temple of Health Radio Show.